Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of the Bloody Legends with Jai, that Aussie metal guy, and Jim Taylor. Make sure you're a bloody legend and hit that like and subscribe so you can keep up to date with all the great content from these bloody legends. Okay, then, g'day. How the hell are you all going? It's time for another edition of the Bloody Legends with myself, Jai, that Aussie metal guy, and my amazing co-host, JB Taylor, all the way from the US, presented by Craig.com and Cranium Radio. Got to give those guys a shout out as well. And we are joined by Dre the Undead, aka Andre from Dead Harrison, who recently dropped their None for All album. Thank you for joining me, people.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you. Dude, this is incredible, man. Thank you for coming on.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Absolute pleasure, dude. First off, for the uninitiated, man, can you tell us a little bit about who Dead Harrison are and how would you explain your sound and style to someone who's never heard of you guys?
Man, that's a very good and interesting question, because it's like I sometimes never really think about it. I don't know. I think as a younger adult, just in my experience of music and being in it, you know, I was very influenced by like the 90s, the grunge era, and like certain sounds that were coming out, like really started to intrigue me then. And it was one of those things where I just learned that I had a love for music, and how do you go and start putting that together, and how, you know. And so the very early stages of playing was very much just trying to like understand even how to conceive the music. You know, you hear so many good things, songs that catch, and it's just like, so in thinking about it, I don't know, I just had more of that like gothy industrial sound when I was like in my head. And then when we decided to get together, it was actually my brother had wasn't doing anything, and I was like, hey, what do you think about, you know, he was a classically trained, just like played piano and trumpet, had no idea how to play guitar, and I'm like, you want to learn guitar and be in my band? And then together we just started putting things together. And so when it comes down to the sound, I mean, it's taking a lot of influences that we have. The first album was like a little bit more like my ideas, and then as we started getting together and doing stuff, and my brother getting in and Jason getting involved with bass, and it, everybody has like their own different influences when and what they listen to, and we all are very different in what we listen to. And so it's like how then putting that blend together, but at the same time being able to create a very thick feel is the best way that I can do it. It's like I don't know, this new album is kind of a little bit all over the place, and like it's hard to pinpoint like what the genre is, but it was more of developing the sound as we were progressing and keeping a certain sound. And then it, I don't even know, it's like magic happens. You just create stuff, and then it takes on, it becomes its own monster. And so I think, you know, when we go back and look, like, what's the story of the Mortuus Ortus was a monster. It was like this thing. And so influence wise and how we put ourselves together is very, man, I don't even know how to put it. It's like you're just finding your own, you're becoming your own. And so, and that's the most that I can say about it. I mean, I don't even really think about the things in those regards. It's more of just, what is the universe like sending through me to just like
put out? It's just good rock. And it's
yeah, and that's the thing. It's like learning all that, taking all your influences and all the things that like hit you in a good place. And like, how do we be successful in the sense of just making more stuff that people like?
Yeah,
I don't know. I
that's very well put.
Yeah, and
I think it's extremely well put.
Exactly. And that being said, you were talking about influencers. Who this is usually Jim's bounce off, man, but who are some of the people that have influenced and inspired you as a musician?
Typo Negative has been my biggest influence. Like
Nice.
those guys, like I saw them so many times. I mean, I got to meet Pete. You know, there was a show that they had up here, and it was like going and hanging out with them for like, even though it was 20 minutes after the show, he was such a cool dude. But that music,
Yeah.
it was just like, it hit me in that way that was just like, I love this. It's like big and beefy, but it's almost like it's orchestrated, you know, so it's not like hard and heavy all the time. There's like movements to it, and you know, listening to their influences, and you know, and you can hear that very like that Sabbath-y sound, but you can hear like the Beatles in it, and it's like there's like certain elements that, and that's pretty much how I look at with how I've grown as a musician, is like taking all those aspects and kind of making a cool blend of them. And like Foo Fighters, surprisingly enough, I really dig the Foo Fighters, and I love what Dave Grohl does in the sense of how he's all over the place. As a drummer, you know, he was one of those guys that I watched. And so I just I so how do you take that? You know, you get these two different things and these two different feelings and blends, and like so it's putting that all together, and you know, those are a couple of mine. I mean, I kind of like listen, you know, because I can be like, oh, you know, Nine Inch Nails could be, and that's a whole other monster in itself.
Right.
You
It's like
know,
I hear, like, there was elements of stoner metal in your stuff, but then, like, y'all's vocals were like, it reminded me of like 70s, like Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And then, like you said, there was like stuff like industrial influences. I mean, it's, yeah, not one, you're not pigeonholing yourself at all.
Exactly. And it's like, and when you know, like my brother is 10 years my younger, so he has his influences took on a little bit more of like Devin Townsend Project and Opeth, and like he was very much in that like nu metal kind of stuff when he was in those years coming into adulthood, and the things that kind of drive you when you're finding your own, you know. And my bass player is completely different. He's like the Judas Priest, Pink Floyd, Black Sabbath, you know. So I'm we all come from like different places where we've pulled this stuff from, and it's like, and what's great is like even this last album, like I didn't want to be the only one that was necessarily influencing the sound of the band. So this album, the majority of the album was written by Jason and Sean. And all I did was kind of like help curate and put the pieces together and make it have that nice cohesion, you know? So, but yeah, Jason wrote a bunch of songs on that. My brother wrote a bunch of songs on that. And it's like, I had a couple of like influential pieces put in there, but that's the thing is like I want to see what all these years of us being together, like I don't want to be the only one that's in control of what the sound is. Like let everybody have, and dude, this album sounds great. You know, I'm just
It's killer. It's ki like every you've done something different on every record too. So that's very cool. I'm sorry, Jay.
No, you go, Jim. Yeah, they definitely
No, I'm good.
have.
I'm good.
It's got a great sound, as I was mentioning to Andre, man. You were watching that Shadow Prism track, and the build up and the intro to that was absolutely unreal. And Jim, when you kicked in with the vocals, Jim was like, man, I was hoping you'd go with that kind of style as well, because we were like, man, we're going to do this interview. So we sat down together and we actually watched that film clip first before we went back and checked anything else out, dude. And it was a really, really cool build up and intro. So tell us about that track.
Yeah. And even that video, like the, just the way that all happened, like we weren't, we were kind of like thinking of doing a video. And then here in town, there was a kid that was going to college, basically for video editing. He wanted to get a job at, you know, working for Fox and the sports network. And so he was going to school for that, but he needed a project. And they told him that he had to shoot a video. So the dude shot us a video. And
that's cool.
Bam. It was like, cool, now we can put some out there. And he did a great job. And I mean, it was just like, it was so random and just like, oh, we got to hurry up and do this because he's on his time limit, you know, when he's got to get the project done. So it was like, oh, let's just make a thing. And yeah, our rehearsal space, like for that night, like I ended up spending like 2 days like building the prop and the ship that we were all in. And like, it was super cool. We just did it right in the rehearsal space and made it a cool thing.
That's even more special.
Yeah, and we have some great ideas for the next videos. That we want to do one for Beach Zombies, and like that's definitely going to be a fun one.
Yeah, that was a cool track, man. Tell us about that one, dude. Correct. Like Undead Riding Waves and killer track, man. I had that one up this morning, sparked up, and kind of a little bit of Wake and Bake and listening away to Beach Zombies, man.
And that's it. So both of those songs were written by the bass player, Jason.
Nice.
He just came up at practice and he was like, hey, I got these ideas. Like, yeah. And the thing is with the Beach Zombies one, we were getting ready to do a show that was in the middle of Vermont, but they were having a beach theme and there's no beaches where we were playing. So randomly just had an idea, like, wrote the lyrics, brought them to the table, was like, here, I got these, like, this is the chords and the progression. And we wrote the song right there. And it was just like, man, this is fun. It's fun. We played it at one show and then we didn't play it for like a year. And it was like, no, I think that it's going to end up on the album. Like, let's just do it and make it that different piece. So
what influences you guys lyrically? Speaking of that, like what other, is it books, is it movies, is it just a little bit of everything?
In the terms of, no, sometimes it's events, like, and there's been other thoughts that we had, like, certain songs as we were putting them together, certain ones were going to be representative of AI models. Like one
interesting Walker, okay,
one is Alexa and one is Siri, and so we were kind of like, oh, this is a very interesting way of putting the pieces together, but at the same time it's also like taking certain real life events, that like Hurricane Hell, my brother ended up going down to Florida to go I think he was visiting family down there, and it just so happened to be a hurricane, and that inspired him to write the song, like seeing like the amount of destruction that can happen and seeing all that in person. So I think he just kind of like put it all together and wrote the song, and then just brought it to the table like, hey, I got this idea. And
that's cool.
And that's how that song ended up happening. Doom Train, another one that was just taken in a very random context. We played a Doom show up in Maine, and at night there was a railroad that was close by and you could hear the train chugging in, and it was just like, oh, this would be cool. And then the guy that was running the show was just like, I recorded a clip of the train for you, like, you should write a song. And we were okay, how are we going to put this together? Like, I was like, Doom Train, because it was a Doom show. It was at the House of Doom. So, and put in the train, so bam. And that's what ended up becoming of it. And it was just sitting there. And it took so many like iterations of building the song first. Like, but once we found that structure and the pieces, it just came together so solidly and was just like, there you go.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about who's got the wordplay going on, man, because there's a massive amount of wordplay in kind of your albums, the Story of Mortis Ordis, and then you've got All for None EP, then the None for All album, and then even down to the Dogs baking dogs, and then it's Gods Making Gods, and there's definitely someone in there that's an English nerd as well, like me, and I did notice that, dude.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that was a little funny thing because my brother was just trying to come up with like some little cool keyboard parts for Gods Making Gods.
Yep.
And he ended up wasn't just at home and was like putting this thing together. And just to give the engineer an idea of like, what can we do with something like this? And then it was just he ended up making it into its own track. And then my brother and I were just randomly texting to each other and like trying to figure out like, what do we name this track? And so I knew it was part of Gods Making Gods. So I was kind of like thinking Dogs Making Dogs. And then he just responded back, Dogs Baking Dogs. And then it just, and all we could think of was two dogs just smoking each other up.
Getting baked in the room somewhere. Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely, that's man. It sounds a lot better than Gods Baking Gods, that's for sure. But that would probably work as well. Who done your cover art, man?
What's that?
Yeah.
Who done the cover art? Oh, share that.
Cover art, yeah.
Well, that was me.
Yeah, man. Cool ass, dude. That's cool.
Wow.
So
that's cool.
I actually made that was done on a full size like 3x4 foot canvas.
Yep.
And then
okay.
So the painting itself is like its own thing, and then I pretty much brought it in, and then I did a little bit of digital modification and kind of like pulled pieces together. So a lot of the album artwork will be featuring like certain pieces, also going into detail, like zooming in onto the artwork itself. And in the artwork, you can almost see a representation of each song.
Yep.
And so,
oh, cool.
That was kind of what I was going for. So beneath the symbol, which you can't see, but on canvas itself, in the what looks like the black hole where the symbol is, there's a little train on a railroad track coming out of the dark in the very center of that symbol. If you zoom away, you might be able to like see the train inside. But it's very when you get pixelated, you can't really see it. But you know, the shadow prism is the triangle there with the black hole in the center. Inside the center of the black hole is in that blackness, you would see the doom train coming out from in there. The big monstrous machine with the double skulls is the terror grinder.
Hell yeah.
And you get the monolith coming out of the top of the prism, with the skeleton up on top with the wings kind of spread, and that's the Monolith Lord.
Oh, yeah, dude.
If you go right down under None for All, you'll see some zombies in the water, and there you got your beach zombies are all down in there.
Hell yeah, I'm a zombie nerd, I.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was just like trying to take all the like little pieces and kind of put it in, you know, you got the clouds that are underneath the symbol that's like the representation of the hurricane, you know, the turbulence. I mean, also with the beach. So, it was just one of like I like being a piece of the process of making the art too. You know, I mean,
absolutely.
I feel like it's definitely like a connection that I have, you know,
Well, as an artist as well, as a you know, well, you're a musician, was an artist, but you know what I mean? Like, it's the right. whole package to me. I think it's our generation a little bit. Mm-hmm. You go and get those albums, the amazing cover art, or the record. And speaking of, the physicals do drop May 24th for you guys, but you go down and you get these physicals and you have this artwork, or you go to your record store. There used to be record stores, people. You go down and you buy stuff from your record store for the artwork sometimes. And you,
Absolutely.
It was a whole experience.
And that was the thing. And, you know, making sure that when we do, because the first album, we only made like, you know, 250 of them.
Yep.
It's like, they're gone. They got to get reprinted. Mm. We got to do them. And all the other stuff has been only released digitally. There's no physical CD for like All for None,
yep,
or any of those songs, right. And I would eventually love them to be, you know.
Yeah.
But this one was just like, all right, well, we've done all this, and it's like, definitely you can hear the evolution of like, and our progression as musicians and learning the path.
Yep.
And so this one was definitely, you know what, this is starting to define us. Like, let's make this a good album. Like, when you get the CD, you're going to get all the lyrics, you know, you'll get a nice 8-page booklet rather than just like a single fold out with just like, hey, this is blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
To be a little bit more involved. Those were things that were important to us, you know, having that CD and being able to go and look in the artwork and look up the lyrics. And I mean, yeah, you can do it all digitally, but there's something different about having that physical thing in your hand.
Thank you.
It's tactile.
It is, man. And I bang on a lot about it, but just having albums, you know what I mean? Having that and then creating that whole listening experience, like this album, like None For All, like, and a lot of these albums are just the listening experience that you can create. The musicians sit there, and bands like yourself, you create your track listings for the album. And in this disposable culture, sometimes we forget, oh, we grab this and that out of it, but listening to whole albums, like, it tells a story, and it has this whole experience, you know, that you can't really, I don't know, you can't explain it unless you do it, you know. Putting on an album the first time you've never heard, listening to it that first week, you're like, man, I really like this track. Then the next week you're like, fuck, I'm gravitating towards this. There's so many different things that you can get from listening to a whole album that people are kind of forgetting a bit now and getting caught up in this digital streaming cycle. Yeah, it has its positives, and I know it does have its positives. It's great if you love a band, listening to it on Spotify, go buy the album, support the album, listen to the whole record. Album, yeah, find those totally deep
still,
fucking
still buy the album, you know.
Yeah.
And so when you go and you take it in that experience, and like there's certain little odes, like the first track is an ode to Typo Negative.
Nice.
If you think about it, remember there was a song called The Misinterpretation of Silence and Its Disastrous Consequences.
Oh, right.
Okay. I was going to ask you about that because I was like, dude, this must be the one where you chop up some weed and get ready to fucking kind of just groove out to some Dead Harrison, man.
Yeah, no doubt.
and so, in taking a second thought of it, it's like, you know, unfortunately, with technology and the way everything is, like, you can see the mentality of, is it broken? You know, it doesn't work. Something's wrong. And I think that that's kind of also what that first track does, is it kind of like makes you go, why is it not playing? Why is it not doing a thing?
What makes you question?
What's going on? Like, there's something wrong, you know, but it makes you, now you have to think, and now you have to understand the title.
Because that's exactly what I did. That's fucking exactly what I did. And I've like, I took various meanings out of it. You know what I mean? Then, as you said, the name of the title, but also I thought this is cool. Maybe it's a kind of like a little bit of a silence to those we've lost, or, you know, it's there's so many different connotations you can take from that. And yes, it does make you think. It definitely does make you think. It's like, it's broken. What's going on? And then you come back and you think about it again, if you're that way inclined.
Yes.
And And that's
Plus, it
also
leads itself in the second track.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And at the same time, there's a magic in the 42 because that's also a Hitchhiker's Guide reference.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So,
right on.
The 42 seconds long, you know, was it's the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Right.
What do we really enjoy?
Yeah.
Silence.
Yeah, indeed.
You know, yeah. So it was like, give that 42 seconds of just silence and understanding. And I don't know, my brain works weird. So
it's brilliant, sir. it's a record. This record, you have to digest it, not just one song at a time. It's take it as a whole. Yeah. I see it as one, not one track, but like one track with several chapters. And that's how I view it anyway. So,
and in music, like, I feel that it's also a way of storytelling.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, I mean, we all love certain songs for whatever they are, but what I like about our writing and the way that we put stuff together is that you make this visual picture in your head as you're listening to it, because there's like certain things that just kind of like create not just an atmosphere, but they kind of give you an idea of like things that are going on around you.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, even like when you listen to Shadow Prism, you're like, you feel like you're floating in space. Like there's a certain element of just like, you're just going out into that blackness, you know?
At 1,000%, 1,000%.
So those are some of the things that I really like about how we think in the terms of putting this stuff together. And it's like, it is that it's a story that we want to like people to feel that they're a part of, you know? And that's the thing is like all the songs at the same time, like have a certain pull to them that you can relate the shit that goes on around us and kind of like make it that little metaphorical like thing that's going on. So, but
sir.
I guess that's the best way that I can think about that.
Exactly. So where are you guys based out of, man? How's the live scene going at the moment for you, man? You got any live shows coming up? What's the go there with Dead Harrison on the live front?
Well, we do. Right now there's a couple things that are going on. Our area in town, we're from Nashua, New Hampshire. So
it has,
unfortunately, all of our venues are pretty much gone. There's like one performing arts center that's like not even good for local bands or anything.
That's happening
like that.
Everywhere at the moment. It's really sad. It's not only there that's happening. It's happening here in my city as well. I know a few other cities here in Australia, a lot of these venues, and I suppose it's been more so ever since COVID. Like even during COVID, we had probably the same there. Some of these venues that do play hard rock, heavy metal shows have kind of just been closed up and then slowly closing up afterwards as well, because one, they didn't have the support during that time, but kind of, I don't know. It just seems a bit shifty and shady to me that we're getting rid of these venues and not many other venues are going to step in and take their place for some fucking weird reason, even though we have the best live community out there. I don't know. I know the Cranker here in Adelaide's about to close, and they put on a lot of heavy metal, hard rock shows, and we're so fast running out of venues. So it is a problem in the whole community. And I think it brings it back to, sorry as I waffle on a bit, but people getting along to the shows. And yeah, it's great. COVID's opened everything up and we've got all these big bands coming into, I know Australia is getting flooded with every single fucking heavy metal band in the world at the moment, but we've also got these local shows and festivals that people can't forget about as well. You know what I mean? Because without a good, strong, thriving local live scene, you will not have these big bands come. So you're stuck in this flux.
Right.
Yep.
And every big band started with it. We're, you know, on a smaller level.
Yeah.
Every band was a small band.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, so it like Boston is great to go and play shows, but like at the same time, it's just like, it's such a hit or miss. I mean, we can go and, you know, go and play a show, but the problem is that no venues anymore take care of the bands. There's no, like, there's
it's bullshit because the bands are bringing in punters to their venue, okay? You have a band come into a show and they sell so much fucking alcohol over their band because they've got fans of, say, Dead Harrison coming along to the show. Say, okay, and they spend this much over the bar and then they walk away with all this money. A band comes in with their merch to put on a show. Okay, now we want to take a cut of what your fucking merch is as well. No, that's what pisses me off as well. Yeah. And it's not like the bands are sitting there at the end of the night going, hey, I want a cut of your bar. You sold this much over the bar. I was in here last night. You had 10 fucking people. There were fucking 100 tonight. I want a cut of your fucking bar. You know what I mean? It just seems absolutely fucking ludicrous, insane, and fucking stupid to me. Sorry as I swear away there, but it really annoys me.
I cuss like a sailor. I'm trying to watch my mouth.
I'm an Aussie, dude. I can't help it.
What flows out of my mouth like it is no tomorrow. But yeah, it's been getting to the point where it's just like we want to play like so many shows and so many cool things, but it's like we're just sick of seeing bands just getting fucked over all the time. Like, no, at what point are you just constantly like wasting your... It feels like you're wasting your time and energy. You're not wasting your time because the people that fucking see you love it.
Yeah.
You know, but then at the end of the day, you're like, man, we just, you know, spent so... We ate at the venue that cost between all the bands spending money and buying food. Everybody spent $300. Then you get your few drinks. You know, there's another $75 amongst three people.
Right, you know,
And
even the little pub I worked at, Andre had it together. We'd pay the band and then they'd all get a fucking meal and they'd have a voucher as well. So they'd get so many drinks over the bar and they'd get their pay for putting on the show at the end of the night. You know, before the show as well. I don't know why venues can't do that. And then we didn't take anything from the merch they sold as well. So, you know what I mean? Pretty fucking easy. And we'd have a full house.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So as the local guy that also like sees and feels this pain, I took it upon myself. Me and my lady ended up putting together an idea where, putting a collective of musicians to get together to start networking with each other, teach people how to, like, you know, you want to learn Photoshop and how to like make your own artwork, or you want to learn how to network, you want to do things. And I'm like, my practice space is a decent sized room. And I'm like, maybe we can host a couple shows here. And then now it's suddenly turning into, now we're becoming an underground venue. And it's like, and that's exactly
that's cool.
Our principle is that people that come and people that pay, all the money is going to the bands that come and play that show. We're not taking a cut of doors and like being like, we got to pay the sound guy. No, we're going to make sure that every band that comes through here,
it's a real community. It's like a metal community collective, and it's something that I think should be adapted in a lot of bloody places, kind of looking after each other and doing the right thing, because it's going to have to be, because we're relying more and more as on the live scene for the life of a band as well, because these days as an artist, it's fucking, again, I'm it's sad because you make an album like the None For All album, and essentially you're basically going, here's my music for free, and hoping people come and see you at shows, buy merch, and support you on the other end, because we know these digital streaming platforms, as you said, are just fucking the artists anyway.
It's basically free advertising.
Yes. So playing live is a huge part of a life for a band. And you know what I mean? You've got to treat it like a real job and a profession as well while you're playing these shows. But also these venues, you've got to look after the artists.
Yes, absolutely. And so that's where I feel it's like, as that musician, it's like, I don't even really think so much about like me as the artist. All I want to do, all I feel like my purpose in life is to be an inspiration for the next artist to kick it up a notch.
Absolutely, you know? Sir. Absolutely.
Yeah, isn't that the kind of the goal of life, kind of be better and do something positive, be better tomorrow than you were today? You know, I know that is for me. You can always improve and you can always do something for community as well. Hence the reason I do what I do today. And I know Jim is as well. He does a lot with the soundtracks and his music stuff and his community. And he's so given of his time as well as a musician.
No, and that's awesome.
Yeah, that's nice.
You guys are helping inspire me.
Okay, where's the best place people can get along and grab some merch, that all being said, and support Dead Harrison, mate?
Hell yeah. I can't wait till we get the new t-shirts done. Like, those are going to...
I think it's... What do we got there? DeadHarrison.com, I believe. Is that the website?
That would be the website.
That's right.
There we go. We get merch and everything over there as well for people that are interested when the physicals drop, or where's the best place?
Yeah. No, I think that's probably going to be the place where we definitely make all that stuff available.
Yep.
It's here, when it's done.
Yep.
I mean, I'm definitely going to be doing my little bit of footwork and trying to get the CDs in some actual stores.
Yeah, nice. I really hope so, man. I hope that works for you. Everybody, you can stream it now till you go get the bloody albums. Okay, and any last words, shout outs, thank yous, or anything else you'd like to add in there, my friend?
And all I can say is that I'm happy that things have progressed and nobody has given up. You know, seeing so many friends and bands and other projects that have happened, and seeing the flux of like the rises and the falls and seeing everything just dissipate and pull apart, and knowing that you just kind of stuck through it. Like, we're going to work together, you know, you just keep those resources going. When you feel like quitting, that's when you just grab it a little bit more
and push
and push forward, you know? And so every day I'm just like, the only way this thing is dying is when I do.
That's it. Hell bloody yeah. Over 10 years of Dead Harrison. Everybody go get None For All. The digital is out now. Physicals do drop May 24th. Thank you so very much for your time, Andre.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you, Jim.